You're listening to the Paranormal UK Radio Network, the best in paranormal talk radio in the UK and around the world.
Hello, world. You're listening to Eleanor Wagner's Strange and Scary World here on the Paranormal UK Radio Network, where we're always creeping it real. I'm your host, Eleanor Wagner.
Welcome all to my paranormal closet, where the stories and magic take place. In 2016, today's guest had a tic-tac UFO sighting, which caused him to reevaluate all that he had been taught. He expressed his changes in perspectives in his debut book, Crossing the Crevice. In the last couple of months, he released his follow-up book, Within Grasp. Grasp is a continuation of UFOs in the Bible and who God is. Join me in welcoming Wallace Wagner. Hello, Wally.
Hello, Eleanor. How are you today?
I'm wonderful, and thank you for joining me today.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
You have quite the array of interests. I saw that you delve in crafts of different kinds, the Great Pyramid, legitimate crop circle studies, and eschatology. I said that right?
Eschatology.
And the Bible, which for the listeners who don't know eschatology, it's the part of theology concerned with death, judgment, and the final destiny of the soul and humankind. I'd like to touch upon all of these topics briefly, if we can, a little later. But first, I would like to discuss your 2016 sighting of the white tic-tac variety, which took place in the town of Bedford, Virginia, that caused you to critically reevaluate your conservative Christian teachings, in that you now realize Jesus should be looked at more as a teacher and the Bible as written is not what it is purported to be. Please explain what a tic-tac sighting is and exactly what happened, if you will.
That's a picture of what I saw. Not the exact picture, but a representation, just like the white tic-tac meant. It was 2016, the month was September, I was a mailman at the time. I had just made a delivery. I was walking back to my vehicle and something told me to stop and look up. Don't know why I did, but I did. And over my head was a solid, white, gleaming, oblong object that should not have been there. I saw it for about 3 seconds, and then it either took off so fast I couldn't see it, or it cloaked, or perhaps it went into another dimension. I'm pretty sure it cloaked, but that's just a personal guess. The object had no windows, no wings, no nacelles, nothing which would allow it to be stationary in the sky. No sound whatsoever. It was there for about 3 seconds, and then poof, it's gone. Didn't think a whole lot about it at the time, but as the hours and days went by, it caused me to reevaluate a lot of things I had been taught. At the time, I was what you would call a very well-founded Southern Christian. I was teaching Sunday school, had a Southern Baptist background and Southern Methodist background. I grew up and was taught you need to believe what's in the Bible. The Bible is God's total inerrant word as it's written. The earth is 6,000 years old, and just on and on and on. And for a while, I did believe that. But as I started doing my own studies, instead of reading books from other people, I have found out that a lot of stuff that we have been taught needs modification. And it wasn't even the original information that was in the early church. It's been modified. And I'll just let you ask a question or two from what I've said.
Well, you said something about cloaking. What does that mean?
Well, it means to me that the craft has ability to make itself not seen by the human eye. The human eye only sees about 2% of the light spectrum to begin with. And it's also biblical for those that want to keep using the Bible as their foundation. You know, Elisha had an instance in which he and his servant were standing outside, and Elisha knew that these chariots of gods were all around him, but the servant could not see them. until Elisha prayed and the servant opened his eyes and then he could see them. That just kind of tells me that these crafts have abilities to not be seen. Perhaps it's, you know, a mechanical malfunction or something for so many seconds that they are seen or they're doing some type of work.
Or not a coincidence, or you are meant to see it for another reason.
I
started out, well, I've been able to see spirits since I was a kid, but I had premonitions when I was a child also, and one had come true that frightened me and kind of stifled any kind of gift that I had. And I pretty much stayed away from that side of me. I mean, I still love to read ghost stories, but I stayed away from the side that I was gifted with. And as a Christian woman, we are not supposed to believe in any of this stuff. So it was kind of like taboo almost. I was born and raised a Catholic. And then when I had a situation with the Catholic Church as a mother, a young mother, I left the Catholic Church and became a Methodist. And after being with the Methodist Church for many years, you know, that was something that I felt was a good thing for my children to have something to learn. Like I wanted them to learn and understand. I didn't trust myself to do that. But since I've considered myself a Christian woman, and I believe that I'm not of any denomination, but I do feel that there is a lot of things that we don't know about that are out there. And with that being said, since I started writing my books, or actually publishing them, I should say, since I actually started publishing the books, I've had the opportunity to delve in the paranormal industry and have learned and met so many people that have taught me so much stuff that it's opened my eyes and my mind to things that I never thought that I could wrap my head around, that there's so much more that we just don't understand or know about.
And kudos to you that you're able to open your eyes and absorb this instead of just calling it all taboo. There is so much good information out there, and a lot of it is darn right down to earth and true. I don't even know where to begin, actually. Yeah,
let's start with the fact that you said you had this 3-second vision of this UFO. All right, and then all of a sudden it opened up a new world to you. Tell us from that point on what happened.
Well, I got to meet some people. I started studying myself. As a human being, we often want to know that we're right. You might go in the Christian bookstore and buy books. You may go to Sunday school and be taught from books. But all those books already support the agenda, the same agenda the church has had since almost its beginning. You're not going to find books on Hinduism or Buddhism or the paranormal or UFOs in a bookstore or in Sunday school. In fact, UFOs, you know, my training up until 2016, all UFOs are from the devil. They have to be. Levitations from the devil. Just on and on. And I've learned that you've got to put that aside, and I use the analogy of within grasp, and go to another lily pad. Same pond, mind you, but jump off the lily pad you're on, go to another lily pad. I got to meet Reverend Michael Carter, and he told me, and I found out this to be true, that I am on a path. Seeing this craft has put me on a path, and I have left the gates of confined Christianity, where many people are still stuck. And Oliver Wendell Holmes, for example, made a comment that once the mind is expanded, it never goes back to its original state. My mind has become expanded. I have learned many, many new truths. And I'm still morphing, by the way. My beliefs have actually changed from the time I wrote Crossing the Crevice till a couple of years ago when I was doing research for Within Grasp, especially with just who God is. My God is no longer the God of the Old Testament. Sorry, no way. My God exists omni everything as spirit in the universes. And my God is full of love. My God does not have murders committed by humans. My God does not need to come down to find Moses my God does not need to come down and see if Sodom and Gomorrah is as bad as he's been told. My God exists in spirit, in light, and love now. And that is perhaps one of the preeminent truths I have found on this path. It is, I don't know, I've called it, it has been freedom in spades. It's taken weights off my shoulders. I feel free now. My spirit inside is jumping for joy. I have found new truths. I have found that there are truths in virtually all the religions, not just Christianity, not just Jesus, but all the religions. I've looked at this now with a big mind and an open mind, and you see that these beings, including Yahweh, including Jesus, all came to earth in all these continents, in all times past, not to destroy us, but to teach us. And you look at Jesus, a lot of people say Savior, Healer. I say teacher, Rabboni, mentioned all throughout the New Testament, including Mary Magdalene, called him Rabboni, Rabbi, teacher. He came to teach us. And whether or not we have mastered what he was trying to teach, that's another topic, but I would probably gamble on the fact that we have not really grasped what he was trying to teach us. Otherwise, we would be able to do the same miracles he did and miracles even greater than he did, because those were his exact words. So we've got a lot in front of us. There again, I've been taught that you have this one life to live. You've got to get it right. You've got to accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior. You've got to be born again. You've got to make a public announcement or confession or profession. You've got to be baptized, and in some denominations, you've got to be dunked in, not sprinkled. Malarkey.
It's always troubled me how they've been totally against the paranormal and psychics and anything of that nature. But you go back to the birth of Jesus and the wise men, and they were astrologists who looked to the stars for answers, and yet. Exactly. We're not supposed to believe in it. It's right there in front of you, but yet they're calling it taboo. And a lot of people are just kind of like in denial. They kind of sweep it under the rug and don't even think that far into it. And it's always bothered me, always.
Well, look at reincarnation.
Okay, that's another subject I could talk to you for hours about, because I'm not supposed to believe in it, but I believe in it 100%.
It is 100%. The early church believed in it. Origen believed in it, the early church father. Many called him the brightest mind the early church ever had. It was okay in the church for 200 years. Jerome ended up taking it out when he made the Latin Vulgate around 404 AD. I mean, the first Bible, they started taking it out, and as the years went by, it was basically all removed, except who was John the Baptist? Bingo, Elijah.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I go back to the second part of John 14. Jesus was either a liar or he's talking about our future. He says we will do works or miracles, not only like he did, but even greater than he did. Now, I don't know if anyone was brought a day old corpse back to life. I don't know anybody who's done miracles greater than what Jesus purportedly did. He's either a liar or it's in our future. I believe it's in our future. It's biblical that God knew us before we were born. The agenda of the church says, oh, well, that means that God knew that he was going to create you. Hogwash, malarkey, poppycock. We were alive before we were born because we were in our natural spiritual state. We may have had a say-so to come into this body and on this planet and into the environment or family in which you've and I have grown up in, and there'll be many, many, many more. In fact, I believe we have born again all wrong. Jesus told Nicodemus he needed to be born again, but Dismas, who was on the right side of the cross on Golgotha, the common criminal, right next to Jesus, we get the idea that he was never saved. He was never born again. He was a common criminal. He never did anything to support society. He never made a public profession of Jesus that we're aware of. He never was baptized that we're aware of. But yet, he was hung on the cross to the right of Jesus, and Jesus told him that very day he would be with him in paradise. Nothing about what he had done his whole life, nothing about all this mantra about being born again and being saved and accepting Jesus as your Lord and Savior has nothing to do with that. Jesus came as a teacher. We're all alive after we die anyway. And that's, I know that you and I could talk for hours on that. I love near-death experiences. I love that you're not dead when you die. We have that all wrong. We have the total misconception of what death is. It's just a simple passing back to your natural spiritual state from which you will be told about everything to be good and bad and be born again, because we are on, all of us are on the path.
I've come to learning.
Sure. Evolution or learning. Our spirit and soul, if you're Methodist, they kind of combine spirit and soul together. But it yearns for knowledge. It yearns for the emotions. It wants to evolve, because I look at everyone on this planet now as my brother and sister, and I did not view it that way before. I view us as all being brothers and sisters. We're all in this together. In some way, somehow, we are all connected with everything around us, everybody around us, and everything around us. Now, I use an analogy within grasp, a tuning fork, say in B flat. You have a bunch of tuning forks in a room, and you ding the B flat you're holding in your hand, and only one of those tuning forks in the room vibrates with the B flat, and it happens to be another B flat. You can draw a lot from that. We're all connected. Everything's based on vibration and frequency now. None of this is taught in church or Sunday school or in sermons. You have to find this out for yourself. And these are some of my truths that I have found out now. And it's gotten so, I guess I'm like you. I'm ecumenical. I have no church to go to anymore. If I had one, it would probably be called Church of the Enlightened Tabernacle or something like that. It would be definitely far, far, far left and ancient alien believer and everything else, but there's no churches like that around.
So what are your thoughts about Jesus being the Son of God?
Well, I am a disciple of Jesus for the simple fact all of his words and writings, at least what we are made aware of in the Bible, resonate with me, that they, my gut tells me they are true, and it's worth pursuing. My gut tells me also that he was a hybrid. And I know that's maybe some people or some of our listeners might consider that to be disparaging. I don't mean it to be. We may be creatures of light, too. I mean, my God lives as light, love, and spirit. And Jesus transfigured. He was half light. If you read some of the scriptures that did not make it into the Bible, Feast of Sophia, for example, there's a wonderful description of him turning into light on the Mount of Olives, where all the disciples were there watching in awe. So he's half human and half something else. Is the something else God? My gut's going to tell me no. My gut's going to tell me that Jesus is my brother. And he's just more evolved than I am. And he came here as a purpose to teach us, like so many of the other masters did who are evolved. And our purpose is to learn. And That's pretty much what I would say on that.
Well, maybe that brings to the premise where he can be, you say he's something else. He is spirit. And maybe that's what the light refers to as spirit.
Possibly, but he could be a being of light. And I'm not real sure what that entails. It's possible, as you say, the light is total spirit, and it vibrates at such a high frequency and is so strong that it creates its own light. You know, even the human body creates photons or light. And the more enlightened or involved or cognizant or conscious that you are up here, the more photons you produce. So from that standpoint, what you say could very well be true.
So, Wally, how does that UFO sighting tie into all of this new discovery for you?
Well, it caused me to back up and do my own studies, not be taught. I took the blinders off. I started teaching myself and found out that everything we've been taught is very, very, very narrow. It's an established agenda, a mantra that's been in place since somewhere around 400 AD. And how dare I go outside those gates? Once I'm out, I'm never going back. I can tell you that. It just caused me to be on this path. And as I'm on this path, as you say, my mind is open. My eyes have been opened. I am cognizant more so now of everything that's around me, much more than I used to be. I would even make the comment that I even feel more now than I used to. I feel lighter, more, as I said, freedom in spades. And seeing the UFO was the catalyst for all this to happen. Maybe who was in the craft, we call it crafts now. I had a professor from Liberty University stun me by saying, we call them crafts now, not UFOs. And that's a conservative university, as you know. But maybe the beings in that craft knew I would write books. Maybe they knew that if I saw their craft for so many seconds that it would change me and make me.
Oh, yeah, I totally. That's exactly where I was headed. I don't believe it was a coincidence. I definitely feel like you were meant to see that so that you could move on in your journey. And it's kind of like the same way with me. I mean, I had that gift when I was a kid, and it wasn't until I was 50 writing my original book, which I had written in the 90s and packed away in the closet. I'm sorry?
You don't look 50. I just had to tell you.
Well, thank you. Actually, I'm 57. But it started when I was 50 that my kids were full grown, and I pulled that book out of the closet when a friend of mine from high school said, send it into my publisher. And that was a fictional psychological thriller. So that's what I was writing. And then all of a sudden, I love ghosts. I love ghost stories. I love true account ghost stories. I love Cape May, New Jersey, which is very haunted, and it's my favorite place in New Jersey. And that thought, why don't I write about true account hauntings in my community? That was what started it all. And here I thought I was just writing true account ghost stories, but one thing led to another thing that led to another thing. And here I am today. You're talking 7 years later, and I've written more true account haunting books than I did psychological thrillers. And I'm two podcasts in talking about the paranormal, and I'm learning and educating and growing more and more every day. And from this, I've founded a paranormal team, and we go into people's homes and businesses to help spirit become acknowledged and help the people that live with spirit in their homes. And I feel like I'm in a place where I'm meant to be, and I'm growing each moment. And so nothing to me is a coincidence. And
so you're on a path as well, and you're cognizant of the fact that you are on a path.
Yes, exactly. And nothing is a coincidence. And I've always believed that there are books of the Bible which have been withheld from the public, and they tell us only what they want us to know or believe that fits that agenda. Do you believe, I mean, this is a thought that I was always curious about, do you believe that Jesus was ever married?
I didn't in the past. However, I've read so much now, including the Book of Mary Magdalene, and some outside literature that I have a very open mind on that, and I would answer your question. If I had to guess, 60% chance, yes, he was, to Mary Magdalene.
Okay, that was what I was going to ask you, because that's something that I've thought about as well. That's what I've thought and believed was a possibility,
and
too.
That's a little bit of a thorn in the side of the disciples, because back then, you know, it was a man's world for everything.
Mm-hmm.
For him to elevate her, it was bad enough to remove all the demons and have her, you know, trail around with all of them. Of course, her writings didn't make it because she was a woman into the Bible. It was a man's club mm-hmm. back then, and was up until, you know, quite honestly, probably within the last 40, 50 years, it was a man's club. But I believe that she was around him so much. And she was the first one, you know, to go to the tomb. I honestly believe that there's a very, very good chance they were married.
And I was born and raised a Catholic, as I mentioned to you earlier, and I've always had a problem with priests not being able to get married because it just didn't make sense to me at all. I recently read a book about a former priest and what the life was like for him and why he left, and it just put this red flag up for me about that's exactly what I was thinking. And it paid heed to that whole thing that I thought that Jesus was married, and that's why I brought it up to ask how you felt about it.
Well, the Catholic Church, if you and I could go to the Vatican and really see what's in there as far as all the books go, they know the truth. They know exactly what's going on. I think they feel that their place in society is to be the common thread to hold society together. I mean, that's really where my brain is right now. I cannot take communion to the Catholic Church, I'll tell you that. I was married to a Catholic for 7 years. Let's just say our divorce was not all that friendly. So from that standpoint, unless I go before a tribunal, I'm not able to have communion with the Catholic Church. And I'm like you, I don't understand why the priest have to be celibate their whole life and be and not marry, especially when the Bible says right off, starting in Genesis, quote, be fruitful and multiply. They're not being fruitful. I guess that you could make the comment that they're being fruitful somehow, some way by providing some type of spirituality for people or helping the fabric of society be fruitful, but they're not fruitful if they don't marry and have children.
After reading this book, though, by this former priest who was priest in Manhattan in the city, there's a whole underground, and there are priests that are actually married that no one knows about. So there's a lot of hidden facts that we don't know about, and he confessed to it and wrote it in his book. So that's another thing. It just tells you there's a lot of stuff going on that we just don't really know about.
There's a lot of Southern Baptists that drink liquor and wine, too, but, you know, it doesn't make it to Sunday school.
Right. So this led you, this whole beginning led you to go on to write your first book, Crossing the Crevice, correct? And then this past October, you went on to publish your second book, which continues that journey, and it's called Within Grasp. Why the second book? What more did you have to say?
Well, this is the second book.
Mm-hmm.
For our watchers and listeners. The first book, more scientific. I cover things that, as you might consider paranormal, and I consider paranormal, crop circles, UFOs in the Bible, how the Bible's been manipulated through the years, how the Egyptians did not build the Great Pyramid.
Okay, yeah. Uh-huh.
And on. And how the Earth is much older than 6,000 years. I use coal as an example because you're actually speaking to someone who has literally mined coal before, back in the 70s. I'm giving my age away. I'm 66.
Okay.
Back when we had the first, you know, oil crunch, I quit college and went underground. And it's, you know, it's a part of my background. I guess I could say I'm proud of it. I've had the experience. It was 36 inches high. Using coal as an example, there's no way that the Earth is only 6,000 years old, and I make a very good case of that in Crossing the Crevice. When I wrote Crossing the Crevice, Yahweh was still my God. I had not gotten down the path far enough to realize that what I had been taught in my formal beliefs were all wacko. So within grasp, it's much more spiritual. It's things I've discovered about the soul inside, more about reincarnation, really about who God really is. Those are the main facets within grasp. And I don't mean to offend anybody. I realize what lily pad I was on. I realize that everybody's my brother and sister. And I realize that we are each on our own path and we move at our own rate of speed. There's no hurry. Time doesn't exist. That's another topic that we could get into. Time does not exist the way we view it. And when you're in your spiritual body, you can forget time altogether when you're in spirit, because the spirit was alive and will be alive later. Just like God, we're little spirits. We are children. We're in the process of growing up. When we leave this body, it's only the physical body that passes. The spirit lives on. Some of that is in here. I purposely did not get into near-death experiences verbatim, because that's typically treated as a whole nother discussion altogether. But I have read so many books on near-death experiences of people who have been to heaven and come back to explain. And many of those experiences resonate totally with me. And for me, I found ways to fit them into the Bible, like what I had mentioned, we were alive before we were born, and that God knew us before we were born. I now have realization it's because we were there with him before we were born. We weren't just created and stuck in this body to live one life here on this one planet and experience what we experience with this one family or environment. I've been alive before. I mean, I've read so much stuff that resonates with me, with even birthmarks, Eleanor. If you have a birthmark on your body, guess what? Most likely, not always, but most likely that came maybe from your previous life, and that's part of what you carried with you. And I have a birthmark on my left thigh.
It could have been a result of what was it? A result of how you died in your previous life. I've done some research on reincarnation myself to write the chapter in my last book, and I read so much stuff on it and was really, really intrigued. I mean, people in the United States and are now opening up to understanding and accepting reincarnation, but it's been
I'm sensing that, not
well received
locally, but I'm sensing that I'm sensing this as a worldwide thing. Christianity's on the decline here in this country, and I'm sensing that people are wanting to know more. So I don't think I'm alone. I don't think you're alone. We have people that are experiencing some things now and are realizing truths that they haven't been taught before. And I'm sensing that it's happening around the globe, like some kind of an awakening.
Yes.
Like in the
past. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
In ghosts. I believe in ghosts now. It's one of those things like levitation. You don't believe in ghosts, do you? Ghosts are from the devil. Ghosts are demons. Ghosts are people who have never accepted Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior. Ghosts exist, and they've always existed.
Oh, that's a first. That's the first. I never heard that before. But, that's the first. I've never heard that before, that they've referred to them as people who have never accepted Jesus. That's
sure.
Is that what you hear?
If they did, they would be in paradise, and you wouldn't be able to see them.
Wow. Yeah, wow. Well, when you were talking about crafts and UFOs being in the Bible, I mean, I have to admit, I was very excited when our former President Trump released to the public that UFOs exist. It was like, oh my God, is he really doing this? It was something I believed for so long and hoped would be revealed in my lifetime. And when I saw that, I was like, it's about freaking time. You know what I mean? And I've heard of the connection to stories of UFOs in the Bible. Would you share some of them with me?
Where to start? let's start in Genesis. When God says, let us go down. Now, you might read that and not pay any attention to it. First of all, God doesn't go down. He's already supposed to be there. He's on high everything. But how do you go down? They don't free fall from the sky. They go down in a craft. This going down is like mentioned 19 times, maybe in the King James. They go down for God at Sodom and Gomorrah. They go down for the Tower of Babel. That's a good example. In Zechariah, we're taught that the word spirit can also mean craft. Surprise. Or chariot of fire. He interchanges the two and calls them the spirit. In the last chapter, or the last book of the Bible in Revelation, chapter 4, John hears this voice from heaven. Now be cognizant of the fact heaven is anything up. Okay? He hears this voice. He sees this door open. And he hears the words, come up here. What if that's literal? What if he really did see a door open? And he went up. Now here's the kicker. Every translation, including the Koine Greek, which I have a copy of, he goes up into the spirit. He doesn't go up in spirit. He goes up into the spirit. And he has flown around the heavens, where we get additional writings for the balance of the book of Revelation with the constellations and whatnot. That
one little word. And I've had this discussion with my husband and my daughter many times that, like, there are certain meanings to words and there are certain ways that you say things that give it an entirely different meaning. No, they're not. Yes. You're talking to a writer. That one word is going to change the whole meaning of what you're reading. Exactly. And it's been a huge discussion between my husband and my daughter and I. And it's so true. There you go. There's a perfect example of it.
I mean, it's true even with punctuation.
Sure.
Where you put a comma or a semicolon, it can change the whole flavor of what you're trying to say.
Absolutely.
Here's another example. Going back at the beginning again, us. Who is us? You're taught, oh, that must be the Trinity. That's God. That's Jesus. That's the Holy Spirit. How many times I've heard that, it makes me vomit. Guess what? That's all wrong. Mm. Elohim was us. That was in the original Jewish writings. Elohim was mentioned over 2,500 times. Elohim, I-M, plural. It meant both male and female. Male and female. This is confirmed. Genesis 1:26, let us make mankind in our image. Not my image, not male God image, but in our image. Male and female, he made them. Male and female. There was even a female god, Asherah, venerated in Solomon's temple heavily. All kinds of artifacts and artifices have been found. So we know that started with the son of Solomon, Rehoboam. I'm probably mispronouncing that. But she was taken out of the Bible on purpose. She was possibly the wife of Baal, the chief Canaanite god, and at least a consort to Yahweh. Yahweh always had a consort with him wherever he traveled. The point being, even Jacob called God Baal, not Yahweh, and he made an altar to Baal and called it Beth-El or El Bethel. And this El, E-L, is used all around the Levant, all around the Fertile Crescent. Towns and cities have E-L in them. So it is well known that El, and it could very well have been Elohim, but we say El for short, was the chief Canaanite god. It was Elohim who created the earth. It was Elohim that did everything. And Elohim included females. Now, getting back to what we were talking about a minute ago, I told you that it was a man's world up until about 50 years ago. Asherah was taken out of the Bible, but now she's been put back in. Huh. A lot of these later translations, which several, like the NIV, claim to be more exact, than the King James, and I believe that it is. They've used the word Yahshua 40 times now, and Jehovah's been taken out. There is no more Jehovah or Yahweh. It was only mentioned, he was only mentioned in the King James seven times, Jehovah. And now in all these other translations, there is no more Jehovah. Asherah is now mentioned, Queen of Heaven. And that's just one of the many things that I have picked up on. And the list goes on and on. But UFOs are mentioned throughout. You have Ezekiel, you have Zechariah, you have Elijah, you have Elisha, you have Daniel. Here's a good example. Daniel chapter 9, Gabriel flew in swiftly this time. He didn't fall from the sky. And yes, angels may have wings, but there's many, many places in the Bible where angels appear as human beings. Angels fly in crafts. That's how they get around. He flew in swiftly in a craft. That's now my interpretation, and that is now what I know to be true.
Why so much secrecy? I mean, clearly you believe there's been withheld information by the government and concerning life elsewhere and the upcoming paradigm shift of known modern-day physics, and that it's been going on for 70 years, and the whole Bible and switching things in verbiage and updating it to their liking.
Control and power to the church. And I know you're formally Catholic, but everything, you know, there's only one church, technically, and even today there's technically just one church. But it was the Catholic Church and the church through the early and middle ages. They yearned for power and control. And that's what they got. And what happens when you have too much power and control? You ended up having the Protestant Reformation. There was so much corruption going on that, you know, it just caused some people to revolt. So
you definitely feel, though, as I do, that there's a shift now in the universe, that yes, people are becoming more aware and there's an awakening.
Yes.
What do you think?
Yes.
What do you think we can expect?
Well, I'm not sure I understand the premise of your question when you say expect. I think the more open-minded we are, the more we use our right brain instead of our left brain, the more creative we are, the more cognizant of the fact that we're not alone and we've never been alone, that these beings, if you will, entities, will make themselves more known than what they have in the past. And when I saw my craft, it was even taboo to talk about for a year and a half. And then lo and behold, you know, the government comes out with the term Tic Tac, and that was exactly what I saw. So I was vindicated. So I'm not afraid to talk about it, of course, anymore. I'm not looked at as being so crazy. I'm still looked at as being crazy, but not so crazy. I think that in our future, these crafts are going to be seen more and more. And if you're open to seeing orbs, to experiencing shadow creatures, to seeing ghosts, to experiencing levitation. Levitation was even accepted in the church too, just like reincarnation. But now, where I'm at, in Southern Christianity, levitation is totally from the devil. I think there'll be more of it. That's what I think, if that's answering the question.
Yes, exactly.
Heard. Yeah. I think it'll be more because we're more accepting. And, you know, if I see a gray or an entity now, I am not going to be scared like I would have been 50 years ago. You know, when I was little, my mother loved science fiction movies. The Day the Earth Stood Still was one of my favorite movies of all time. And it actually scared me a little bit when I was little watching it. But if I see something like that now, there is no more scared. Just like when I saw this craft, I wasn't scared. In fact, my being said these simple words. I said, well, hello there. That's exactly what I said. It wasn't started shaking at the knees. Oh, there's God, or right. I'm going to be taken up or something. They're brothers and sisters like we are. They're just more evolved, more technically evolved, more spiritually evolved. And as I say, that's all in our future.
The reason why my books are so well received and have been so successful is because people are not afraid to speak up and talk about what they've seen and what they're experiencing. Whereas opposed to 10 years ago, only 10 years ago, people were still afraid to open up their mouths about living with a spirit in their home, or they didn't want to be called crazy. But now, because it's become so well known and well received, more and more people are coming out of the woodwork and opening up about their experiences and sharing them. And I think that's a huge step in the right direction.
Myself too, like you have, a lot of them have had their own experience, but in the past they've been afraid to say anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it's a huge step in the right direction for sure that people are, you still have people out there that call you crazy. You still have people that say it's evil and it's the devil, and I kind of like poo-poo it and just, you believe what you want to believe and I'll believe what I want to believe, you know, because you're not going to change
that. It will be different.
Yeah, and I also talk a lot with people when I'm interviewing them in that subject, that it's so great when you have people that are raising their children to understand that they're not crazy, because a lot of people who have been brought up when they're young to understand the gifts, because I do believe that these abilities are gifts, that they have these gifts, that they're not crazy, they're not cursed or anything. When they have a parent that embraces that and helps them to understand it and not fear it and not be called crazy, they nurture it and they grow it and they learn to develop it and do what they were required to do with that gift in the first place.
That's what we need more of. That's what we need more of. Less religion, more spirituality.
Yes. Yes. Now, what's this whole thing about the crop circles? What do they mean? What's the reason for them? I mean, I know a lot of them have been debunked and have been considered hoaxes, but then there are the others that are just unexplainable. And what's the reason behind them?
I wish I could answer you with specificity. I can't. If I could, I would probably be feeding you a hook, line, rod, reel, sinker, and all that. No one, from what I have read, really has the answer for your question. It's like so many other things. There's an enigma out there. Everybody starts talking about it. And they were talked about so much back in the late 70s and early 80s. Until two people show up, Dave and Doug, and all of a sudden, they admit to making them, and then it sticks on the wall, so the mainstream media picks it up, runs with it, and now the subject is either not talked about, or we pretend they're not there, or if you talk about it, it's taboo and you're crazy.
For the listeners, a crop circle is purported to be an area of standing crops that has been flattened in the form of a circle or even more complex patterns. And though there's no explanation identified, various natural and unorthodox clarifications have been put forward. And like you just said, Wally, these two guys came along and said that they created them. And so that was considered a hoax. So
Doug Bauer and Dave Corley were the two gentlemen's names. They both passed away now. You can make a good case that these crop circles appear, legitimate ones, in a matter of seconds. Not days, not weeks. They appear in daylight and in darkness, both. There's been reports of pilots flying over a specific field, drop off their passenger, flies back the same way, looking down at the same field, there's a crop circle. It was not there before. If men made all these crop circles, could you imagine being out there at night with their little helmet lights on, trying to follow a pre-planned way and design on where to step? I mean, you see everything, every one of your steps going out there. If you made one or two wrong steps, then it wouldn't be perfect.
Just not logical.
What you talk about. When we make a crop circle, we destroy the crops. I used a good example with canola. It has a very delicate head when it's in bloom. If we went out there and made a crop circle with snowshoes or whatever and stepped on it, we would break the stems and absolutely destroy the heads. You would have a field of mush is what you would have. But in a real crop circle of canola, the plants are not destroyed and the heads are still viable.
Mm.
Bingo. You can see people walking in the trails going out to a crop circle, they leave their footprints in the field. And could you imagine all the cars lined up along the field with people out there trying to make this at night where nobody could see them? This is ludicrous.
It's just ridiculous.
People of renown that are still studying this today, college professors, people in the know that a lot of them are legitimate.
Yeah. And
they're still being made today. I wish I could answer you as to what they specifically mean.
Yeah, I would love to know.
There's many designs, but a lot of mathematics, geometry involved. And a real crop circle, you can go inside of one. I got this from Lucy Kringle. People get nausea, they get lightheaded, time slows down. They can have an ultra-modern watch that only loses 2 seconds a year, an ultra-precision watch, and they go in there and come out, and it's lost 6 or 7 seconds. It's crazy, time distortions.
You had touched upon other dimension earlier in a discussion. So
it's possible. I mean, there's some video out there, and whether or not it's legitimate or not, I don't know. But it shows two orbs. You and I believe in orbs, energy, balls of spiritual energy appearing, swooping down, making a crop circle, and then departing.
Really?
That falls within, the time frame. It just takes a few seconds to make a crop circle. But we don't see who makes legitimate crop circles. So perhaps they are orbs. And the orbs are certainly controlled, that's for sure. So I guess to answer your question, I would have to leave it that it's an unknown, advanced being or entity, somehow, that makes the circles. And most of them, not all of them, they've appeared in every country around the world, but most of them to this day still appear in England. So I wish I could answer, why, but that's what's happening.
Interesting. And going back to the pyramid, too, the Great Pyramid of Giza, which is the biggest Egyptian pyramid and tomb of the 4th Dynasty Pharaoh, built in the early 26th century B.C.
Supposedly.
I remember as a kid when learning about the pyramids in school or in church, we were always made to believe that thousands of men, slaves, built them with their hands. But I could never quite wrap my head around that theory. And I have grown to believe that they were built or at least assisted by aliens or extraterrestrials that helped them to build.
Gods. They would be called gods.
Mm-hmm.
For the Great Pyramid, Eleanor, is even depicted on our dollar bill. It's got an unfinished top. We don't know where the Ben Benstone was or is. Some would say that Jesus brings it back with him when he returns. I've read that in some scriptures. But the Great Pyramid, when you go to Egypt, you're taught that the pharaohs wanted to usurp one another, do a one-up from the one before. They wanted to have a better tomb than the pharaoh before. And you're led on this journey that they started off with the step pyramid, and they went from there to a bent pyramid, trying to get the angles right, and then they ended up with the Great Pyramid, which happens to be the pyramid of supposedly Khufu. And then what happened? Guess what? There's nothing but a pile of rocks for the next pharaoh. How did the Egyptians know that the Great Pyramid sits at the exact center of the earth? Geophysically, it sits at the center of the earth. How did they know this is an exact mathematical representation of this planet? How did they know that the sides were concave to the exact degree of the curvature of the earth? How did they know so many things? It's socketed into the ground. It's the only pyramid that's socketed into the ground. All the other pyramids sit on the ground. But the Great Pyramid is elusive. It is socketed as part of the ground.
Huh.
When it had its original Tura white limestone box on the exterior. You could not see the door. It was so well hidden and balanced on like a little pin. You could have taken your pinky and opened that granite door and that limestone casing door. It was so well balanced. It appeared as a solid object. And it's been calculated that there were 36,000 limestone blocks on each side. Four sides show 4 times 36,000 is 144,000. Now, I'm going to make a connection. That's the same number of chosen ones mentioned in the book of Revelation, 144,000. What makes this interesting is that before the earthquakes in and around Cairo, around 1100, the limestone was still on the Great Pyramid. What happened was there was the limestone became easy pickings for the mosque in Cairo after earthquakes, which crumbled. So they went there and took those square blocks, hauled them to Cairo to make many of their mosques. But when the blocks were in place on the Great Pyramid, ancient writings say that individual names were on each one of those blocks, written in a language that no one could decipher.
Could decipher, wow.
So I found that interesting. Is it possible
that
the creator of that pyramid, whom I believe was some of the original Egyptian gods, whether it was An or Osiris or whomever, was responsible for building the Great Pyramid, and it could even be 30,000 years old. My belief now is that all the other pyramids are mere copies of that pyramid. To give you why I believe that is that all the other pyramids have artifacts, statuettes, belongings to the pharaoh to help that pharaoh get to the afterlife. But in the Great Pyramid, no artifacts, no hieroglyphics, nothing has been found. Nothing. In fact, the only...
Oh, that's really interesting. I didn't know that. That's interesting.
The only statue of Khufu, I'm holding, that's about 6 inches. One statuette has been found, and it's been found hundreds of miles away. That's what we know about Khufu. And yet, that's what we're told. That's who built the Great Pyramid for his tomb. And no mummy was ever found in the Great Pyramid.
Huh.
So having said all that, I'm of a firm believer there again, ancient history, for whatever reason, has been either lost or purposely quelled, possibly even by the Vatican, is that there are other gods that have come in the past. Anyone who came down in a craft, anyone who had special powers, was considered a god. This is even as late as the 1940s. In the Within Grasp, I have a chapter on what happened in Manitou and some of the Solomon Islands with the cargo cults. When we dropped supplies down for our GIs, the place was so remote, the indigenous people didn't even know a war was going on. They hadn't seen an airplane or anything yet. Here came down these crates full of cokes and cigarettes and chocolate bars and everything else. Guess what? That became their god. They even made an airplane out of sticks. And that cult is still in existence today. Even the Apostle Paul was considered a god when he didn't die, when he was bitten by a venomous snake. If I lived 500 years ago and would light a match and hold it in my hand, I would be considered God because I could create fire and make it go away in an instant.
Right.
I mean, that's human nature. So you can imagine these beings coming in crafts, many of them looking different than you and I, trying to teach people. Of course they were treated as gods. And then who would have time to make a glyph on a rock when your concern back then was shelter, food, and heat? For some of these ancient drawings of these ancient beings and even crafts, some of them show crafts, it was a seminal point in these people's lives, something that important that they wanted to share, to write down for following generations to know about, for them to do that. Of course, today we have the internet and TV and whatnot. So we still do the same thing, you and I write. If something happens that changes what we were, we want to share it. And I believe that's human nature as well.
Wally, I really enjoyed this conversation today. There's so much that we could talk about, and it's all in your books, right? So,
well, I don't put a lot of near-death experiences in there. There's so many books out there on that particular subject. I really don't cover ghosts either. I know that's your
specialty.
I do believe in them now, and I didn't before. This is Within Grasp. I've got four books that didn't make it in the Bible in the appendix. And this is Crossing the Crevice. There's also four books that did not make it into the appendix.
Go ahead and let everybody know how that they can find you and your books, please.
I have a website. It's simple. It matches the name of the book, withingrasp.net. And if you go there, it will tell you about my latest book. In the upper left-hand corner, you can also go to Amazon. It'll take you right to the page where you'll see both of these books listed. Crossing the Crevice was originally written as an 8.5 by 11 in full color because there's so many pictures of crop circles and glyphs.
Really?
Old paintings, tapestries and whatnot that I wanted to bring that out in color.
Right,
so it's a lot more expensive. But there's also a grayscale, an 8x10 grayscale that's there. Of course, everything's available on Kindle as well.
Pictures that you're talking about that were in that book, do you have them on your website?
I don't right now. I took the website and replaced it with Within Grasp.
There's something that you might want to consider, because I did it with my books too, because when you have the books, I do have photographs in my books too. I have a picture of location in the beginning of every chapter, and then there's the center of the book where I have some really great pictures of featured stuff that's in the books. But there's no way to see it as good as you can if you see it in color on the website. So I created galleries on my website. So if somebody has read Sussex County Hauntings and Other Strange Phenomena, Book 1, and they want to actually see the photographs. Because when you're looking at a picture of somebody that gets a ghost on camera, black and white just doesn't do it justice. But if you put it on color and they go to it, they're like, oh my gosh, I see that face in the window. And so I created these galleries for my readers that they can actually go to my website and click on that book's gallery and they can see the actual photograph or listen to the video, watch the video, listen to the audio footage that I talk about in the book. So it really sounds like...
I might have him do that.
Yeah, it sounds like, because I would just love to see those pictures. And like you said, to see them in color, it's so expensive to put them in a book. But if with the touch of a button nowadays, you can get into your website and create that. And I'm sure you would have a lot of traffic of people going to check out the photographs on your website after they've read the book. I'm going to read the books. I can't wait.
Thank you for sharing.
And thank you so much for coming today. I really enjoyed this conversation.
You're very welcome, Eleanor. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you. And if you all out there like listening to this week's episode and you're into all things paranormal, check out my other show, Eleanor Wagner's Creepin' It Real podcast out of the Coast to Coast Entertainment Network, which is available wherever you get your podcasts and streamed through Eleanor Wagner YouTube. And if any of you are interested in reading any of my books, you can find the links to them on my website, AuthorEleanorWagner.com. I read about the history of the town and location, add the paranormal story to the mix, and finish it all off with photos and evidence. Thank you all for coming.
Ghostly listeners, you can follow me on my website, AuthorEleanorWagner.com, where there are links to my books and video updates and photographs from all investigations. Thank you, paranormal enthusiasts, for tuning in today. I hope you'll come back again. Remember to tap into your own gifts. Everyone has them. And in the meantime, make sure you're creeping it real.